Namaha.
Namaha.
Offering obeisances.
Offering obeisances.
Jai. Unto you.
Unto you.
Ashisham Isho.
Ashisham Isho.
O topmost of all bestowers of benediction.
O topmost of all bestowers of benediction.
Manave.
Manave.
Unto the Supreme Mind or Supreme Manu.
Unto the Supreme Mind or Supreme Manu.
Karana Atmane.
Karana Atmane.
Supreme cause of all causes.
Supreme cause of all causes.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Offering obeisances.
Offering obeisances.
Namaya.
Namaya.
Unto one who knows the best of all religion.
Unto one who knows the best of all religion.
Brihate.
Brihate.
The greatest.
The greatest.
Krishnaya.
Krishnaya.
Unto Krishna.
Unto Krishna.
Akuntam Mehase.
Akuntam Mehase.
Unto one whose brain activity is never checked.
Unto one whose brain activity is never checked.
Purushaya.
Purushaya.
The Supreme Person.
The Supreme Person.
Puranaya.
Puranaya.
The oldest of the old.
The oldest of the old.
Shankhya Yoga Ishvaraya.
Shankhya Yoga Ishvaraya.
The master of the principles of Shankhya Yoga.
The master of the principles of
Sankhya
Yoga.
Cha.
Cha.
And. Translation from Prabhupada by His Divine Grace. Shri Prabhupada. Shri
Prabhupada.
My dear Lord, you are the topmost of all bestowers of all benediction, the oldest and supreme enjoyer amongst all enjoyers. You are the master of all the world's metaphysical philosophy, for you are the supreme cause of all causes, Lord Krishna. You are the greatest of all religious principles, the supreme mind, and you are the brain which is never checked by any condition. Therefore, I repeatedly offer my obeisances unto you. Please repeat. My dear Lord,
my dear Lord,
you are the topmost of all bestowers,
you are the topmost of all bestowers,
of all benediction,
of all benediction,
the oldest,
the oldest,
and supreme enjoyer amongst all enjoyers,
the supreme enjoyer amongst all enjoyers.
You are the master of all the world's metaphysical philosophy.
You are the master of all the world's metaphysical philosophy.
For you are the supreme cause of all causes.
For you are the supreme cause of all causes.
Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna.
You are the greatest of all religious principles.
You are the greatest of all religious principles.
The supreme mind.
The supreme mind.
And you are the brain.
And you are the brain.
Which is never checked by any condition.
Which is never checked by any condition.
Therefore,
therefore,
I repeatedly offer my obeisances unto you.
I repeatedly offer my obeisances unto you.
Perfect. The words Krishnaya, Akunta, Medase are significant in this verse. Modern scientists have stopped their brain work by discovering the theory of uncertainty. But factually, for a living being, there cannot be any brain activity which is not checked by time and space limitations. A living entity is called Anu, an atomic particle of the Supreme Lord, and therefore his brain is also atomic. It cannot accommodate unlimited knowledge. This does not mean, however, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has a limited brain. What Krishna says and does is not limited by time and space. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 26, the Lord says, Vedanam samatitani vartamahani charjana vivasyani cha bhutani mamtu veda nakashtana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. Krishna knows everything, but one cannot know Krishna without being favored by him. Thus, for Krishna and his representative, there is no question of the theory of uncertainty. What Krishna says is all perfect and certain, and is applicable to the past, present, and future. Nor is there any uncertainty for one who knows exactly what Krishna says. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on Bhagavad Gita as it is, as spoken by Lord Krishna. For those who are engaged in this movement, there is no question of uncertainty. Lord Krishna is also addressed here as Ashi Sham Isha. The great saintly personalities, sages, and demigods are able to offer benedictions to to ordinary living entities, but they in turn are benedicted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without being benedicted by Krishna, one cannot offer benediction to anyone else. The word Manavi means unto the Supreme Manu is also significant. The Supreme Manu in Vedic literature is Swayambhuva Manu, who is an incarnation of Krishna. All the Manus are empowered incarnations of Krishna, also known as Manvantara Avatars. There are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma, 420 in one month, 5,040 in one year, and 504,000 Manus in the lifetime of Brahma. Since all the Manus are directors of human society, ultimately Krishna is the supreme director of human society. In another sense, the word Manavi indicates the perfection of all kinds of mantras. The mantra delivers the conditioned soul from its bondage. Just simply by chanting the mantra, Hare
Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama,
Hare
Rama,
Rama Rama,
Hare Hare. One can gain deliverance from any condition. Karanatmane. Everything has a cause. The theory of chance is repudiated in this verse, because everything has its cause. There is no question of chance. Because so-called philosophers and scientists are unable to find the real cause, they foolishly say that everything happens by chance. In Brahma Samhita, Krishna is described as the cause of all causes. Therefore, he is addressed herein as Karanatmane. His very personality is the original cause of everything, the root of everything, and the seed of everything. As described in the Vedanta Sutra 112, Janmadhyaya Sahajata, the absolute truth is the supreme cause of all emanations. The word Shankhya Yogeshwaraya is also significant herein, for Krishna is described in Bhagavad Gita as Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic powers. Without possessing inconceivable mystic powers, one cannot be accepted as God. In this age of Kali, those of a little fragmental portion of mystic power claim to be God, but such pseudo-gods can only be accepted as fools, for only Krishna is the supreme person who possesses all mystic and yogic perfections. The Sankhya Yoga system, popular at the present moment, was propounded by the atheist Kapila, but the original Sankhya Yoga system was propounded by an incarnation of Krishna, also named Kapila, the son of Devahuti. Similarly, Dattatreya, another incarnation of Krishna, also explained the Sankhya Yoga system. Thus, Krishna is the origin of all Sankhya Yoga systems and mystic yoga powers. The words Purushaya, Puranaya are also worthy of special attention. In Brahma Samhita, Krishna is accepted as the Adipurusha, the original person or the original enjoyer. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is also accepted as Purana Purusha, the oldest person. Although he is the oldest of all personalities, he is also the youngest of all, or Navayovana. Another significant word is Dharmaya. Since Krishna is the original propounder of all kinds of religious principles, it is said, Dharmantu Shakshad Bhagavat Pranitam, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 3, Text Number 19. No one can introduce a new type of religion, for religion is already there, having been established by Lord Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna informs us of the original Dharma and asks us to give up all kinds of religious principles. The real Dharma is surrender unto Him. In the Mahabharata, it is also said, Yecha Veda Vido Vikra, Yecha Dhyatma Vido Janaha, Te Vedanti Mahatmaranam, Krishna Paraman Sanatanam. The purport is that one who has studied the Vedas perfectly, who is a perfect Vikra, or knower of the Vedas, who knows what spiritual life actually is, speaks about Krishna, the Supreme Person, as one's Sanatana Dharma. Lord Shiva therefore teaches us the principles of Sanatana Dharma. Om Gyanatanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshuramritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svapadantikam Namo Shivaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Dinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachadine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasya Chari Satayine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vansasitona Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here Lord Shiva is glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a person. There is a brain. God has a brain. It's like we have a brain. Whatever we have, God also possesses. Why is that? Because we're all parts and parcels of God, of Krishna. But our brains are material brains. They're not spiritual brains. They're imperfect brains. And as Bhagavad was mentioned here in the fourth quarter, they're atomic in size. Perhaps even subatomic in some cases. I know myself, definitely. And in many occasions, Prabhupada would be asked sometimes quite really ridiculous questions, even by some of his topmost leaders, on morning walks especially. I remember there was one American sannyasi, Rabbi Nagin Swami, and this is in London, and he just read part of the Bhagavatam where it says that all the planetary systems are contained within the lotus stem of the. This book is growing from the navel of Garbhodaksha Krishna, and the topmost part where the flower opens up, the actual lotus flower, that's where Brahma appeared. So, in between the flower and the navel is where the 14 planetary systems are contained. And so, the Bhagavatam said, how can you understand that? How is it possible? And Prabhupada said, because it's a very big lotus stem. And then Rabbi said, but how is that conceivable? Because we see sometimes in botanical gardens, sometimes in places in India, we see these lotus flowers growing, and the stem is very thin. How it could be so big? And Prabhupada said, you have a puppy brain. He didn't say it was a subatomic brain, he said, you have a puppy brain. Puppy is a little baby dog. So what does a baby dog know besides playing with, you know, just playing around with little balls or bits of cloth or, you know, just doing all kinds of silly things. So he said, you have a puppy brain. There's no way he can even begin to conceive of this arrangement by the Supreme Lord. So therefore you just accept. There is no uncertainty. Because he was trying to imply that his parts. Is it really true? Is it just a figment of somebody's imagination? Is it just a kind of like a metaphysical, not quite exactly that's how it's constructed? It's just an analogy, perhaps? No, Prabhupada said that's where the planetary systems are situated, within this type of the lotus flower. So, whenever we're confronted with unimaginable things, at least we can imagine this type of setup, then we simply have to accept. Because even great personalities, much greater than us, who've got very big brains, they don't understand, just like Krishna says here in the Bhagavad Gita 7:26, or Jiva is the Supreme Personality of God, and I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present. And all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities that we, no one knows. That also applies to this cosmic creation, just like at the moment this, in the scientific world there's so much talk about developing huge telescopes with 25-meter mirrors, big glass mirrors that are used in telescopes and hurling them into space and trying to find out what is the origin of the universe. But as Prabhupada said, you know, if you've got an atomic brain, everything you're going to do is going to be pretty much useless because you're trying to measure something which is immeasurable with material means. And therefore we have to actually apply our spiritual understanding. And the only way we can apply that is by following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, the previous sentient personalities, and the previous Vaishnava scientists who have come to the conclusion of how this creation has come about. And we get all this information from the revealed scriptures. Scriptures that were revealed to great personalities like Lord Brahma, Narada Muni, Sri Vyasadeva, Madhavacharya, Asita, Deva, and so on. And of course Srila Prabhupada, because after all, Prabhupada is the one who, out of his cause's mercy, came to the West and spent so much of his life's energy in establishing this Vedic philosophy through the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and Srila Prabhupada, and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Srila Prabhupada in Italy, because, first of all, I'd like to thank Vidai Chaitanya Guru and the IRC for inviting the devotees from Amsterdam to come participate in this Red Essence Festival, which is so enlivening. Thank you so much for showing so much kindness and love. And of course, we're in this part of Europe called Belgium. Those Prabhupada never visited Belgium, as far as I know. Is that correct? But he certainly thought of Belgium, and he spoke about Belgium also. Do you know of any incidences that he spoke about Belgium? No? So you're hearing this for the first time. Okay. Well, he happened to talk about Belgium in Italy, in Rome, in 1974, in an historical context. Prabhupada was very merciful. He came there and stayed for 9 days. And this was in the end of May 1974. We had just installed the first Gaudiya deities on the premises of Lord Shingadev. And we've actually been in Rome for just under a year. After we acquired the manor, we're still in the kind of pioneering spirit. And we personally requested Srila Prabhupada if we could have permission to go to Rome. And Prabhupada became very enlightened by that request. He said, yes. He said, you go there, you find a house, you write to me, and I'll come and stay with you. He didn't say things like, oh, do you know Italian? Do you know anything there? How are you going to do these things? No. Actually, we didn't speak Italian, and we didn't know anybody there. But just by the amazing mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and just by saying just a few words like that and encouragement was enough to set things in motion. So we did go to Rome in 1973, and within about the space of about 6 months, we found a house, and by the association of Ali Krishna, Madhusevita Prabhu's wife, because I requested Bhagwan, who was a GBC at that time, of that part of Europe, for help. As I mentioned, I'm Scottish, so I didn't learn Italian in school, I learned French and German, because we're not European. And Italy has a South European country. And that language wasn't taught in the school that I went to. So, but I learned two words very quickly when I got to Rome. Mendicity and apitasi. Anyone here speak Italian? Yeah, apitasi means for rent, mendicity means for sale. Like to call for tabur. To call for sale, to go for rent. So, did find something, a fetacy, but obviously I wasn't in a position to speak to the owner, because the owner didn't speak English. So I requested Baba to send somebody down from Paris, because the first Italian devotees joined in Paris, like Samaka, his wife Rita, and Ali Krishna. They were the first three Italian devotees. So he sent Ali Krishna because he didn't think she was any good in the focus to go. And I have to say that was the best choice he made, because she's a very, very intelligent devotee and very serious. So with her help, we made an appointment to see the owner of this particular house. It is a house in its own garden in a small street called Pian Streta. And that's near a very big cathedral, the second biggest in Rome, after St. Peter's, is San Giovanni. And San Giovanni is St. John. And St. Peter is St. John. So that's near a place called Piazza Lodi. And in those days, we didn't have a car, just like today in Amsterdam, we don't have a car either. We go around by public transport. So we also went around in public transport in Rome. And I could see that people were very, very favorable, because I'd just walk around just dressed like this. And people really thought that I was a Catholic missionary. Perhaps doing some activity in some Asian countries, part of the Asian preaching. And they would call me Father. It's really funny. And whenever I got on board a bus or a tram, and it was crowded, someone would always offer me their seat, out of respect. And I was walking down the street, past shops, just little shops. Sometimes the owner would come running out of the shop and say, "Oh, Father, please come into my shop, bless my business, bless my family, bless my children," and give me donations. So I felt very comfortable for a second. It's a very sort of welcoming thing to you, like a stranger in a strange city not speaking the language. So Ali Krishna suggested that perhaps the first meeting I should put on normal clothes. That I should wear a hat, I should wear a jacket, wear trousers for this appointment with the owner of this particular house. It never struck me that's what I should be doing, because we're just so used to being in devotional clothes. I didn't have any non-devotional clothes, just employees and clothes. But anyway, so we went there, and she said, "Don't take off your hat," and said, although it's considered impolite, and she says, "Oh, why didn't you take off his hat?" You have to say, "Well, I was in a motorcycle accident, and I had an operation on my head, I had a big scar, and I had to shave all my head of hair off, and that's why I feel embarrassed to take off show my scar." She already kind of pre-planned this kind of meeting. Anyway, it went really well, because it turned out that she didn't like the previous tenants, who were Marxist-Leninists. Because in those days, I don't know if you ever visited Italy in the early 1970s, but the biggest party, political party, was the Communists. And they were against the Christian Democrats, and they were obviously the capitalists. And there was always huge demonstrations and fights going on. There was a person in Italian, shopper. Shopper means there's always bans, people can go to work, strikes. And these political groups didn't know where we fitted in. the Christian Democrats thought we were communists, and the communists thought we were Christian Democrats. Because we were out there too, doing our demonstration in the form of Harinath Sankirtan. So this lady was really happy to find out that we were religious, and so she gave us a very good price, and gave us a good deal on the rental agreement. And so we had to paint the whole house from top to bottom, because it was covered in communist slogans and hand and sickle signs everywhere. It was basically red and black colors. That was one of my favorite colors. And some of the windows had been smashed by some of the other political groups when they found out what we were doing and where they were living and so on. So she was really happy that we were very peaceful. And there was a nice basement area, and we converted that into the temple. So then we installed Gornitai, as I mentioned, in Rama Shingadeva's appearance in 1974. And I wrote to Srila Prabhupada at that time. Prabhupada was in Bombay. That's when the city was called Bombay, now of course it's called Mumbai. So at that time, Prabhupada apparently was suffering from severe headaches, because it wasn't easy to manage India and what was going on there, and especially in Mumbai, we had the problem with the city council, because he wanted to stop the worship of the deities there in this tin shed. The deities, of course, are rather relatively hard. So when Prabhupada got my letter, he said to the secretary, the Sasarup Maharaj at the time, he said, "I'm going to Rome. I've got this invitation. I'm going to Rome. I remember I promised that I would go to Rome." So very quickly arranged for his ticket, and we picked him up at the airport. So Martha was driving, and was sitting in the front seat with the driver, and Prabhupada was sitting just behind me, along with Bhagavan, because Bhagavan came down at that time also to meet Srila Prabhupada. And so we had a very nice reception for Srila Prabhupada at the Rome airport. And then we were driving into the city, and Prabhupada looked outside, because he was always very observant about everything. So he looked and he said, "What are they growing in the fields?" To me. He says, he kind of leaned forward and asked, what are they growing in the fields? I said, "Oh, they're growing grapes." She looked around and said, "Oh, they eat a lot of grapes in Italy?" So, well, it's not really the grapes that they eat. They transform the grapes into wine, and they drink the wine. And Prabhupada reflected for a moment and said, "Oh," he said, "well, according to Ayurveda, a little wine is good for digestion." So then I said, "Well, actually, Prabhupada, don't drink just a little wine. They drink wine instead of water." "Oh, that is not good. So that means they're eating too much meat, and they require the wine to help digest the meat. So that is very, very bad." So I'm not suggesting, "Oh, run out and buy bottles of wine and take a little wine after eating." No. So I'm just saying that this is what Prabhupada said. There's an Ayurvedic tonic, which is fermented grapes. It's actually fermented grapes. And it's a bona fide Ayurvedic tonic. Because, of course, Prabhupada is a pharmacist by training, but he was trained as a pharmacist, so he knew these things. So then he saw a sign, and in a very quiet voice, because Bhagavan was sitting next to him, and he wasn't even seeing him, he said to me in a whisper, "What does that sign mean?" And I said, "Oh, that sign means one way." You know the Italian?
Senso unico.
Senso unico. So then, armed with that knowledge, Prabhupada turned to Bhagavan, and the next time the sign came up on the road, because it does, you know, he said, "Bhagavan, what does that sign mean?" And he kind of looked at Prabhupada, looked at the sign. "I don't know, Prabhupada." And he said, "You don't." He said, "It means one way." He says, "I know Italian, you don't." I don't know if you know, but you know, those people of you who know Bhagavan, you kind of have that kind of air of knowing everything and being in control. And then Prabhupada showed him up. by that very simple sign, by seeing, because it's everywhere. You see sensa unico, that sign is everywhere. That was just, you know, an amazing sense of humor and also an amazing way to deflate one's ego very quickly. So then we get to the temple, and so if you know Rome, where that Gasolodi is, there's one very famous road leading out of Rome called Casalino. You know that road, Casalino?
No, I didn't. I just spent a little time in
Rome. Okay. So I didn't even know that myself. I mean, we just found this place, and it seemed to be a good location. I had no idea where it was and how ideal the location was. It was actually very, very close to the city center. But it was noisy, and it just so happened when Prabhupada came, the weather was extremely nice, just like Radharani is nice here, and Radharani would be experiencing extraordinary, beautiful weather. Very warm, very sunny. So at the end of May, Rome gets really warm. It's up to about 37, 38, sometimes 40. Very warm. Mediterranean. So Prabhupada liked that very much, and so when it came to showing him the room, actually it was my office. We converted that office into Prabhupada's darshan room, his office, and also his bedroom. It's a 3-in-1 room. And he insisted to open all the windows because the weather was so nice and he liked the nice breezes around. But naturally, when you open all the windows and you're very close to a very busy road, then you hear all the car sounds. And in Italy, they definitely, you know, you can hear the car sounds. Because in those days, they were always beeping their horns, just like India. Of course, I hadn't been to India, but... No, actually, it wasn't. No. Yeah, it was, actually. I went there in March of 74. So this is in May of 74. So it sounded like that. It kind of reminded me of India. And so I tried to lamely apologize. I'm really sorry about the traffic noise, Robert. But I said, no, no. He said, this sound means very important place. Probably just a very charming way of making you feel that you've done the right thing. Very encouraging. Just little snippets like that. And as I mentioned, Sasrupa was Prabhupada's secretary. He was traveling with him. But unfortunately, he succumbed to jaundice. And he became very weak. And so he was supposed to also cook for Srila Prabhupada. That's one of the, besides, you know, recording, going around with the tape recorder that you are real to real and recording all the Prabhupada's morning conversations and classes and so on. He was supposed to cook for him. And he had brought with him some dried karala. Now you know what dried karala looks like? It looks like little sprockets, they're called in English. little sort of things that belong to some machinery, like some industrial machinery. It was really funny when you see it for the first time, and we never used karala. It was dried, but Prabhupada at that time was in the habit of getting Satsrup to make him what's known as shukta. You know what that is? Shukta. It's good for stimulating the appetite. You're supposed to, in Bengali, in West Bengal, they always start a meal with something bitter. And that stimulates the appetite. And Prabhupada had a very strong appetite in those days. So what to do? So then, Balagopal volunteered that she would cook for Srila Prabhupada. So then Prabhupada cooked the dry karala hut and said, so I want you to make shukta using this. And she went, I've never made shukta in my life before. I've never seen those vegetables. I said, oh, I'll come into the kitchen and show you. Because where the room was just a few meters away from the kitchen. So he taught Balagopal step by step how to make the shukta. And another occasion he wanted parathas, and she didn't know how to make those, and so she was also taught how, personally by Prabhupada in the kitchen. And as far as I understand, you know that that photograph of Prabhupada standing in the kitchen?
Yeah.
And he's
no,
just with his dhoti on? As far as I understand, that was the photo taken in the wrong kitchen.
Really?
Yeah. And that's a very favorite photograph to put in everybody's kitchen. Every dhoti has one of those photographs. And also in Rome, he introduced the chanting of Sri Guru Charanapatam, because we weren't doing that before Prabhupada arrived. We just had Govind, we put on the recording of Govinda, a deep reading and then kirtan. And then Prabhupada noticed that and said, Mike said, you should, because it was begun in India. And as you can correct me if I'm wrong, but this, in 1974 was the first time, as far as I'm in Europe, that this was introduced, the singing of Sri Guru Charanapatam. And he got to that group, it was kind of well enough to stand and speak for a few minutes to teach me how to sing that particular, what the tune was. So we would sing that every morning. And so Prabhupada, being very curious to see what Rome was like, he wanted to go to different areas. He actually requested that, and we take him to different historical places like the Colosseum and the Forum and other places. So one of the places that we went to was a place called Eor. And Eor has what's known as fascist architecture, because it was done at the time when Mussolini was the president, he was in charge. So it's a fascist style, and it's a big park. And in the park, there's all these plants and flower beds, and bushes, and trees, and grass. And this is where the Belgian connection comes up. Because one of the devotees said, oh, isn't this a beautiful part of Prabhupada? Do you like this part of Rome? And Prabhupada said, all of these living entities that you're seeing, all the trees and the flowers and the grass and the shrubs and the bushes, they're all suffering. This is a place of suffering. You're thinking, oh, this is very beautiful. But they're thinking, I am suffering. Because they've fallen into that condition of being so far removed from loving Krishna. Yesterday it was all about how we can develop love for Srimati Radharani, and how, of course, her love outshines the love of Krishna, and how Krishna couldn't understand that amazing, intense love that Radharani shows for him. But when we come into this material condition, and we take birth as a flower, a bush, or a tree, just like here, this part of Belgium, there's so many trees, so many forests, but they're all suffering. You have to stand out there in all weathers, when it's hot, when it's cold, when it's freezing, when it's raining, when it's dry, and anybody at any time can come with an axe or one of these big blades, you know, cutting down the trees or the branches, and they can't run away. They can't resist, they have to accept their fate. And then he said, just like in the First World War, 1914-1918, he said, when Germany invaded Belgium. So the Belgians, they were very much afraid of the Germans. And tens of thousands became refugees, because their towns and villages were being occupied. They were being destroyed by the Germans, by the huge German army. So what did they do? They fled to France, because they thought, well, France is our ally. So at that time, of course, the French and the British and the Americans were all fighting the Germans. And there were so many lives lost, especially, I think, also in this area, isn't it? This is an historical place where,
yeah,
I think, both World Wars were fought,
yeah,
not just the first. But we're talking about the First World War. And there was a very famous French general called General Foch. You've heard of him? In Paris, there's one big road called Avenue Foch. F-O-C-H. In French, you say Foch, but actually, Prabhupada runs a Foch. Foch. F-O-C-H. Like the Dutch. Foch. And I kept thinking, I don't know anybody about that, you know, I've never heard But then we looked up, you know, because he spelled it. And so that's a very important avenue in Paris. It was named after this general. And what did this general do? He did something really terrible. When he found out that all these Belgian refugees were running for shelter in France, and they had severe food shortages because of the war situation in France. Because they were sending, you know, so much supplies to the front for all the soldiers. So he gathered around all his men, all his other military leaders, and said, "I'm sorry, but I don't think we can accommodate these Belgian refugees. It's going to create a huge burden on us, the French people. We'll have to kill them all." And that's what he did. What he did was, he organized that all these tens of thousands of Belgians that were coming across the border, and they guided them into this valley, and he had positioned all his guns, big guns, around the perimeter of the valley. And so when they're all gathered, there's maybe 50,000 or maybe more than that, I'm not exactly sure, then he gave the order, fire, and they fired on the helpless Belgian refugees and killed them all. That's a blot on the French war history. And very few people, I never read this, because you don't, it's covered up. So brothers, just see how cruel Maya is. You're thinking, or these refugees were thinking, yes, France is our ally, they're on our side. They'll look after us, let's take shelter of France. Yeah, this is what happened. So Prabhupada was actually using that example at that particular time, that we shouldn't feel comfortable that, oh, we're living in this beautiful environment, it's so nice, it's so peaceful, and so on. But at any moment, Prabhupada said, Maya can strike. So he said, we should never feel too comfortable, we should always feel a little on edge, a little uneasy. So we don't sort of like fall back into thinking, yeah, well, this is a nice place, I don't mind coming back here a few more times. There's so many places I haven't seen the sunrise in Hawaii, in the Maui. This is a very famous place there in the Hawaiian Islands for its sunrise. It's the most beautiful stuff. So people, they plan their trips, they plan what they're going to do with their money and their time. And then, you know, they want to see all these different material things that are going on. You want to see beautiful, clear, blue water and pure white sandy beaches, wafting palm trees, and all this kind of stuff. But actually, this whole place, this entire world, from top to bottom, even up to the topmost planet, so to speak of the opulence there of life and the duration of life that they're experiencing in Brahmaloka, in Siddhaloka, in Tapaloka, Jnanaloka, there's so many, and just the moon, even, for instance. The moon is also a very heavenly place where people, there, the denizens of the moon planet, they drink the somaras, and that somaras is a lot better than anything, because it enhances their beauty, enhances their senses, it enhances their sense gratification, like anything. And it's already enhanced because they're demigods. So they have this amazing enjoying spirit going on already, but the somaras even increases, you know, something we can't even. And then they don't end up next day with a hangover. Or they destroy their brain cells, the few that they have left, you know. By taking the somaras, but actually the hangs there. They're focusing. They have their stamina also. So he said we shouldn't in any way feel that, you know, maybe there's something I haven't quite experienced yet, and that's why I should just instead of, well, I don't want to become Krishna conscious too quickly. Because that'll spoil everything. All my plans that I have are making those particular plans. But actually, our only plan should be how to become Krishna conscious, how to develop more and more love for Krishna, just like that amazing question that was asked by Nirantara in Georgia, Atlanta Temple, to Prabhupada. What will please you the most? What can we do that will please you most? And Prabhupada said, trying to develop love for Krishna. And that will solve all of the problems. And there was another thing that's a little bit late, it's supposed to finish now. So, what time is the last finish?
You have a special privilege.
Another morning, Prabhupada in fact suggested to Bhagavan that we should write a book entitled How Krishna Consciousness Could Solve All the Problems of the World. All the problems. The petrol shortage, the financial crisis, the deforestation problem. We were walking down this little lane and there was all these weeds growing. I mean, very tall because of the weather. You know, things grow very rapidly. And the city don't come and cut down the grass. They just let it grow on the side of the road. So Prabhupada said, actually, you can make paper from these weeds. You don't have to cut down the trees. Because that was one of the questions. What about the forest problem? There's, you know, thousands and thousands of hectares that are being cut down for paper, for constructing the furniture, and for building houses and so on. And so Prabhupada noticed also in Rome at that time that there were so many political parties, and we put up posters on the sides of buildings, public buildings. Hundreds and thousands of posters, hundreds of thousands of books and magazines. So Prabhupada said, well, first of all, we won't allow, when he said, when we actually become more and more prominent in society, we won't allow the publication of frivolous books like novels and ladies' magazines and so on. Because it's frivolous things, it's just all nonsense. I mean, who's benefiting spiritually by reading Hello or OK or whatever the publication happens to be? And he said also that these political posters we should stop this immediately. And he said, and the other thing is, of course, especially the DBT trustees were always in anxiety thinking, well, what in the future if the situation is so bad that there's no paper to print more books? And the Prabhupada said, okay, so then every temple should always keep a full set of the books. And if anybody wants a copy of them and there's no paper available, there's no books available to be sold to them, then they can bring their own paper and they can be given a room and a table and they can copy longhand of the books. And so they will appreciate like anything else. So that's how this all happened. And with the petrol problem, because again that's another big anxiety. The North Sea oil is running out, the North Sea gas is running out, this thing is running out, that's running out. I said, well, we just give up this running on four wheels and we run four legs. We use horses, bullocks, oxen, camels, elephants. Yeah, he said that's the standard mode of transport for human society. Because in the Battle of Kurukshetra, you don't hear about, you know, Grandfather Bhishma driving a big tank or something, or riding the battlefield in an open top, you know, Cadillac, or Mercedes, you know. He said that's not the standard mode of transport for human society. It's always been animal transport. And I did ask you about this, and how did all these soldiers get to Kurukshetra? Because he said they came from all over the world, not just local, not from India. They came from China, they came from Russia, came from Africa, it came from North America, it came from South America, it came from Europe. So even though it's Europeans, of course it wasn't known as Europe, but soldiers, warriors came from Belgium, from the Netherlands, from France, from Scotland, from Ireland, from Germany, Scandinavia. So they came by boat. By boat, by horse, by bullock cart. And in fact, it's funny because way back in 1969, we were staying on the property of John Lennon. And he was incredibly terrible for the first couple of weeks. In fact, he wanted to give us a donation of land. He had 76 acres of land. He wanted to give us 6 acres for growing our own fruit and vegetables and grain. And so when Crompton heard this, he was very happy that he had offered some of his own property. And he said, yes, we should immediately start planting vegetables and growing grains. He said, whatever balance is left over, we should take to the market in central London and sell. And he said that it should be taken in by ox cart. 1969. When I heard that, of course, I was thinking, that doesn't sound very effective. So the problem in this country, everything is shipped by lorry, and at that time, the main fruit and vegetable market was Covent Garden, the old Covent Garden. And so I said, you know, the lorries, they travel really fast. And so if we set out from here, which is like 25 miles outside of London, it's going to take forever to get there. By ox cart. And the father said, no, he said, they start the night before. And they will walk throughout the whole night. And they will reach there even before the lorries get there. Because I've never been to India. I've never seen that system. I've been there, the buffalo car. The guy's sleeping in the car, and the buffalo is walking and walking. Or the camels, same thing. You see that even today on the road. The driver's fast asleep, and the animal's just walking by himself throughout the night.
No fatal accidents. I just heard it from the lecture.
No fatal accident.
Because the driver, they go to sleep and they just find a way. But even if they would collide, they will
that's the big deal.
But just that you just see how God was thinking, even way back in 1969. And that's, we're talking 40 years ago.
Can I ask you a question about the trees? I was just in Sweden, and where the BT is, and they say in Sweden, every tree which is cut down, the factory who does that or whatever, has to plant 1.6 trees for some of them will die. And there's now more trees in Sweden than 100 years ago. Because that is the green money, the trees, the big suburbs for them. I want to ask you a question, why is it that in this city...
That's one country.
Yeah, I know, I want to ask you a question, why is it that you started in Amsterdam, you started in Rome, in the temple. Why is it that in those days the Pope easily joined the movement like the Argent in 73, and there were like 11, and in 75 there were 80. So what is the reason why there's not so many people joining the Irish at the moment, according to you?
Well, I would say it's because that mood of the hippies especially in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, this mood of being renounced from society, we don't find that so much these days. There isn't really a hippie movement going on, although there's a pseudo hippie movement where they have all these big music concerts, right? I mean, Subhaka, you know more than I do. And they're trying to kind of emulate that kind of, isn't it, in a lot of places? They're trying to recreate artificially. But they don't have the same spirit of renunciation. Because Prabhupada praised young people in those days that they were so renounced. They're willing to renounce all the material facilities and join the temple and follow the Buddha's principles. That's a big thing, that we don't find that as much happening in these days. In fact, in most big temples, they encourage their congregation to stay at home. And once they don't move, they kind of discourage that. But of course, in India, the opposite is happening. There's so many students that are, who are IIT students, very intelligent, and many have got their degrees, but now, because they can't find work, and they need to be engaged, need to be employed. And they're actually saying, well, I just want to remain frustrated because there's so much competition these days. It's like 3,000 applicants for one every job. Some places it's 10,000, 20,000 for one job. So that's why a lot of them are joining the temple. Because you can see that they can actually use, they can utilize their brains in Krishna's service. Because Krishna has the best brain. Like she was saying here. But it's the same. You are the greatest of all religious principles, the supreme mind, and you have a brain which is never checked by any condition. Whereas, students' brains are checked because they can't find employment. What do they do with all that learning? A lot of them commit suicide because they're so frustrated. They've gone through all that tapasya, all that years of, studying and cramming so much information, cramming. I mean, that's, it's intense. But then they can't find any work. So it's a great opportunity, especially in India, to get the cream of those brains and attract them to Krishna and engaging in developing love for Krishna.
Well, getting back to your story, why was it that John Lennon reneged on his offer to give the land?
Well, because he was very much influenced by his wife.
Srila Prabhupada was also very outspoken. He then found it out. They did like that.
Well, also what started the whole thing was that at that time, I don't know if you remember, but there was a time when they made an album called Join the Open Forever. And then standing naked holding hands, that was the cover of the album. And the front cover shows them from the front, and the back cover shows them from the back, standing in their nakedness, and it says Join the Open Forever. Even in their home, they had a little sculpture, a little statue made of them standing on their piano, like that, holding hands naked. And so that's really what Yoko really was determined to ask Prabhupada, and she did. She said, well, we know that you're very close to Krishna, being arranged with Krishna, my husband and me, we want to stay together eternally. Life after we die, we still want to be eternally together. And Prabhupada, being teacher, not a cheater, he said, I'm sorry, you're going to be separated at death. There's no way you can stay eternally together. And she didn't like that answer. Unfortunately. The Prabhupada told them the truth. Yes. You want to answer another question?
Do you have any personal instructions to Srila Prabhupada that you could share with us? At least one.
Well, actually, there's so many instructions. He gave me so many practical instructions. One of the instructions, or the many instructions, was he wanted me to go to Manipur. Manipur. Manipur is a northeastern state of India, some of more of Myanmar and Bangladesh. And I've just been appointed the temple president of Vrindavan, Krishna Bhavan Mandir, 1975. And of course, I didn't immediately say yes. I said, why? Why do you want me to go there? You just made me the president here in Vrindavan. And I knew that Manipur was about 1,500 miles away. And so I thought I'd done something really bad and just kind of sending me off to some remote place. And then he said, no, he said, actually during the British rule, so many Christian missionaries, they went to Manipur and converted the local Manipuri Vaishnavas into Christians. And he pointed to me and said, you're a Scottish Vaishnava. You know, then many people would say, I'm not Scottish, I'm not French, I'm not Belgian, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm just pure spirit soul. But here, Prabhupada was utilizing the fact that I was in a Scottish body. He said, you're a Scottish Vaishnava. So you have to go to Manipur and convert those Christian Manipuris back to being Vaishnavas. So according to time and circumstance, you can say that I'm a French Vaishnava, I'm a Dutch Vaishnava, but Norwegian Vaishnava. But it took me 16 years to get the entry permit. I couldn't go the same year, I had to wait 16 years. Because that part of India was a restricted area, and no foreigners were allowed to go there until 1991. And then, when I finally got a reply from the Ministry of Home Affairs, they gave me 5 days. And it's part of India. It's like going to North Korea or something, you know. Or even more difficult. It's maybe easier to go to North Korea than it is to go to Manipur in those days. And I was the sixth foreigner. The first five were all Japanese. Because there was a big war fought there in the 1940s between the British Indian Army and the Japanese Army. And the Japanese were trying to infiltrate India through Manipur because Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose, you might have heard of him, he formed what's known as an INA, the Indian National Army, and he had secretly flown to speak to the Emperor of Japan, Hirohito, and he told him, if you would like to help me, I want to kick the British out of India, so why don't you use your Japanese army that are doing very well in that part of the world? You enter into India through Manipur, my Indian National Army, I'm training them, they're going to meet you, I have 100,000 men that sworn to defeat the British, so we'll combine forces, and then we'll kick them out. The only trouble is, the British have really good intelligence. They found out about the secret meeting. And so they had amassed this huge army at that particular point in India, and they killed 30,000 Japanese soldiers in this big battle. And the Indian National Army was completely disbanded. You know, it didn't happen. Although there is a museum, I've been to that museum in a place called Moyang, outside of the capital, Imphal, where they keep all the old photos of the INA from the 1940s. But unfortunately, the British Army, the British Indian Army especially, was just too immense. The bomb Calcutta, you know, you read that in the Prabhupada was, you know, writing his Bhaktivedanta magazine and running to the French house here and there, and there was bombs falling in Calcutta. And even people would comment and so I'd say, oh, Abhay Babu, what are you doing? Why are you walking up in this dangerous time? And he'd say, well, Krishna wants me to, maybe he's going to send a bomb on my head and I'm going to go now. That's what happened. Krishna wants me to die, and then I die, and Krishna wants me to live, it's not going to happen. That was always his way of reasoning. Which, of course, we're also supposed to do the same thing. So he just went about his Krishna conscious business. Well, the bombs from Japan were falling in Calcutta. He also told me about the Hare Krishna dolls. You know, that story too. That was a instruction. Yeah, to make Gauritai available to even the Nityas. Prabhupada said that to me too. He said the next wave of Sankirtan after the books is Hare Krishna dolls. So the books are book Bhagavan, Gauritai are present Bhagavan. And they're so merciful that they'll even enter into the home of the Nityas and not take offense. That was quite a story. Because he wanted me to have a source of income in Vrindavan. Besides the Divya, there's all sorts of other things that he told me to do, is start a business making Divya outfits, which I did. He gave my wife and my daughter a very beautiful house and compound to live and to do business there. So they wanted to stay in London and do business. And that's what I did. And one time I had 35 workers working upstairs. Mostly Muslims. Out of the 35, 30, 32 were Muslim, three were Hindu. And the three Hindu workers gave me more trouble than the 32 Muslims. Because they're expert in sewing, in stitching. And I was a direct threat to, all the other nuclear bombs. When they found out what I was doing, they were really quite concerned. Because I was taking artists from all over Islam. Prabhupada told me to do that, to travel around the temples and to get orders from Miami, from London, from Los Angeles, from Denver, or wherever, and do business in their towns. And probably we were the only example of that. We actually, he got the comment donated to him, and he said, this is your home in the garden. You live there, you be comfortable there, you eat nicely, from time to time, visit the temple, but you do your business. And if you get any profit, then you build up, make the place secure. He was concerned about that too, because that's where the goshala is. It wasn't a goshala before, although we did buy the first cow in 1976 from Govardhan cow market. This man bought the cow from Govardhan. We paid him 30 rupees to walk, about 40 kilometers, with the cow and the calf. Rajarani, and that was the name of the cow. She gave 10 liters of milk, 5 in the morning and 5 in the evening. There's also a problem, he's very concerned that we drink only cow's milk, not buffalo milk. Because you know what he said about that? If you drink the milk of the buffalo, you get the brain of the buffalo. And you're talking about the brains here, so Prabhupada is not very much in favor of what he's developing buffalo brains. So we'll finish that. Well, I know that some devotees have allergies. They're lactose intolerant. They're like, I suppose, for medical reasons. But generally speaking, he wanted us to drink cow's milk. But we could take buffalo yogurt and buffalo cheese, but not buffalo milk, and not buffalo ghee. And he particularly didn't like vegetable ghee, he preferred cow's ghee. And he went to great lengths, even we were getting it from Australia. This Alari company, and the boys were doing huge, big 20-liter tins of ghee, and we had a big godown in Vrindavan. And we were the main center of the distribution, just being distributed to Mumbai, to Delhi, to Calcutta. We had thousands of liters of ghee. Cow's ghee from Australia. Because we couldn't get any cow's ghee in India. But now you can do that. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.